This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com. You're listening to the best of
FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio presents Ian Molesworth.
We're joined now by Alex Fox.
I'm not a fan of 50 Shades. Those books are not well loved by many people on the responsible fetish community scene because they depict in many ways a problematic dynamic. Least exciting erotic series that I've seen in a while. I've virtually fell asleep watching those films.
But that can also happen after a while.
True. If I'm late for anything, it's usually I've had a wank falling asleep. A fap and a nap, as I like to call it.
Every Monday,
Ian Molesworth.
From 4 p.m.
Radio. We're joined now by Angus Imrie. Hello, sir.
Hello.
As per, at this point, I'm just knackered.
I mean, I've heard you're looking for a fight today.
I am, actually.
Oh, did you actually hear that next door?
I brought my gloves.
That'll be it.
Have you got a signature move in fights?
Oh, just all the combos. Just
all the combos. All of them.
The thrashing
all
combo.
Of them. Yeah,
just
yeah,
literally
I like
just flail.
This.
Left swing. My left swing's quite...
Are you left-handed?
Swing. Oh. Left swing. Is that a technical fight term?
The left swing. I like it.
Yeah, my right lean is brilliant. Right, let's talk about your stupid film.
It's a good film, right. I've seen it.
Well, Nat has seen it, and do you know what? And genuinely, because she can be disingenuous, Nat.
Mm. Like, all the time,
if any of the guests are listening now, who've been on before, if she was saying she liked your stuff, she wasn't necessarily telling the truth. Like, she will act, you will often just butter people up. However, in real life, off-air, earlier on, when I was asking who the guests were today, Nat did say, and I watched that film, and she sort of rolled her eyes, she went, I had to watch it, and rolled her eyes, and she went, it was brilliant.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Like, you were, weren't you? You were proper gushing about it.
I thought you were excellent. I thought the whole cast was excellent, to be honest. But Angus does a nice little rendition of a song called Love Is All Around in the very beginning of the film, and your mum in it is Julie
Hesmond.
Who you said was one of the nicest people you've ever...
One of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. I don't mean to mean in entertainment, I mean in my life.
She's the best.
She really is the best.
You know, she's now like, what did she do? She did the thing at the Labour conference, didn't she?
You know,
she was just the best person to play your mum.
But but she's totally credible as a person. You believe every word that she says.
Yeah,
there's no sort of sense of affectation or sense of that she's playing something up. She's absolutely genuine as a person. That's what I found. I'd like to meet her again. It was only very briefly.
But I said Sally Lindsay's in it, and you know Sally Lindsay, said you met her.
I've worked with Sally Lindsay and got on with her. Got on with her. But Julie, particularly.
You loved it, okay.
I had no issues with Sally, but I didn't think I'd like Sally because she's like big pals with Peter Kay, and I didn't think I'd like that. You know, that certain sort of mank.
Yeah.
Thought she might be like that, but
right.
She wasn't one of
them.
Well, tell me about Pond Life, because I've not seen it.
It's sort of a film about young people, really.
Okay.
It was written as a play in the 90s by a man called Richard Cameron, and it only had young people in the play. And so the adults who are in the film are just sort of, they're added to kind of make it a more credible vision of the town. And it's the backdrop of it is like, you know, South Yorkshire, where the mines have closed, but it's not really about that. It's just about young people, really, where, like anywhere, they don't have anything to do when they're young, and they're just searching for something. And actually, in this film, everyone has very different motivations. Like, my character Malcolm is completely in love with a girl called Cassie, and that's his whole life.
Okay.
You know, but everybody else has very different things. But we're united going to this fishing trip to catch a legendary carp,
right,
which everyone calls the Loch Ness Monster. And someone says, got a back like a pig. You know, it's like this huge fish.
Okay.
And that's kind of the crescendo of the film, is when we all go together and fish for it.
So it's like Stand By Me, but without a dead body.
Exactly. With a fish.
With a fish. It's Stand By Me. If your PR are listening, or indeed if they're with you now, and you want any help, you can have that as a quote. It's like Stand By Me, but with a fish instead of a dead body. Well, it sounds like it's a journey movie, so it sounds like it's something that... It sounds gentle. Is it gentle?
Yeah, it's very gentle.
It's gentle, but there are certain elements in it that you think, oh, that is quite dark, actually.
Definitely,
as well,
There's a twist in the middle of it, where you suddenly go, well, there's something dark happening as well. But I think that's just part of, you know, life, and it's part of like young people's growing up, and I think it's a good balance between the two. But it is a beautiful, both the rural aspect of it when it's like in the ponds, but also the towns. It's very visually.
Where did you film? Whereabouts did
we filmed in Maltby and Edlington.
Okay.
And this amazing part where these huge ponds are. So it was like, you know, I don't think they're towns particularly that have had like film cameras, you know, film crews around.
Mm.
So it was a real like balance of getting things, you know, being a good addition to the town rather than an imposition.
Is that, that's Yorkshire, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is
South Yorkshire.
Yorkshire,
yeah.
I think it's mental that more stuff doesn't get filmed in Yorkshire.
It doesn't,
right. Because I'm like Lancashire, Cheshire, really. I'm the opposite side of the War of the Roses.
There, right,
no, no, it's not that. What I mean is that it'd be odd for me to champion Yorkshire because
right.
I'm from the other side of the War of the Roses, right?
Is that, that's not still going on there, is it, that war?
It certainly isn't rugby.
Oh, OK, right, yeah.
But,
it's a long time ago.
But the Parapod movie was shot a lot in Yorkshire, loads of it in Yorkshire, because it's just it's a stunning place.
Yeah.
And from industry to the countryside, like, and all in between, everything about it, it's very aesthetically pleasing for from in a cinematic sense.
Definitely.
And I'm surprised more hasn't been shot there. Like, Brastoff's one of my favourite films, and Brastoff portrays Yorkshire visually just amazingly well. Yeah. Is it character based? Is it character driven?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're really distinct. There's Pogo is one of the central performance plays played brilliantly by Esme Creed Miles. Mm. She is very damaged. She's a young woman who we're not really sure why, if she has learning difficulties or whether there's something that's happened, and it merges throughout the film exactly.
I have that
with
Nat.
Do you?
Yeah.
Honestly,
I think I could really relate to this film.
Or the
no, we don't know if she has learning difficulties or whether she's just or whether summer's just happened. I've got no idea. But there's summer, do you know what I mean? There
is
summer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go on.
That's all right. The character Tom, who is played by Tom Trev, he sort of takes her under his wing. And so it's, you know, the relationships are kind of skewered. You know, everyone's like an individual trying to find their meaning themselves.
Mm.
But there are these real, I mean, the relationship between those two, Trev and Pogo, is the gentlest and most intimate.
Yeah.
And that's
okay.
kind of like,
yeah,
the,
yeah.
It's not a love story at all. Between them, but it's an even more intimate, really.
It's like a platonic love, I would
that's
say.
It. Yeah.
It's a really, it is, I would say, kind of love story-ish, but in a platonic way, in a really sweet, nice way, that how he looks after her.
Right.
Really taking care of her.
I'm increasingly drawn towards, and I don't know if it's an age thing or not, but I'm increasingly drawn towards character-driven stuff beyond, rather than action-driven stuff.
Really,
somebody's telling me about Avengers this week. There's no spoiler in this, so I'm not seeing it, but the new Avengers film. And they said, oh, I think you might like it because it's really character driven. It's not so much about all the battles and all that sort of stuff. And then Vegas rang me on Saturday night and essentially spoiled it.
Did he?
Yeah.
But he knows better.
But we had a conversation.
Johnny Vegas, I should say.
We were talking about it, and I said, don't spoil it. And he went, no, I won't.
And then he definitely
But then he said some kid at one of his kids' school had told all the other kids a spoiler on email. I sent out an email.
God.
A group email to everyone. And then Johnny told me some of the details of that email. I was like, but you're telling me this and
that's
this and
so
this.
Mean.
Yeah, it was real. But he was like, well, I'm not saying that. I was like, no, but you are. You just told me that. But anyway, that's by the by.
But I think you're right. I think, particularly actually with comedy as well, character driven stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes you watch things and it's just about the gags. Gag, and it doesn't really do it for me. But when it's only that character could say that line, then it's funny.
Yeah.
You know,
really,
I mean?
Weird though that situation comedy is called situation comedy and not character comedy, because situation comedy relies on character, you know.
What,
even though it is a situation, they are in the same situation every single week in a sitcom, generally speaking anyway, it's actually about the characters always, from top to bottom, the best to the worst, it's always about the characters. So I find myself now increasingly just not, I don't want to see explosions anymore, I don't want to, do you know what I mean? I'd rather watch people being real.
I agree, and that is what I do love Game of Thrones a lot, don't get me wrong, but I know that the episode that's the newest one has the longest like battle scene in history, and for me I get quite bored of just people fighting. I quite fast forward it, and like, I just want to see the outcome, who's dead, who's alive. I don't need to see a 45 minute fight scene of anything. I prefer character driven stuff as well. I would say
I think I'd quite like this, is my
you
feeling.
Would like, yeah, you definitely would like it.
No, you can't say I definitely would.
Okay, I'm 95% sure that you
I
would.
Mean, we've got. I've enjoyed speaking with Angus.
Yeah.
So I've got that selling point going. Oh, I know that bloke. I know.
Yeah,
I've chatted with that bloke.
Yeah.
Nearly had a fight with him, but it was all right in the end. I could say it in the cinema.
You can say that, yeah.
Nearly had a fight with him. He's got a terrifying left swing.
Well, I haven't seen it, but I've just saw that you're in the Joe Cornish film,
The
Kid Who Would Be King, which I want to see that as well. I'm a big fan of Joe Cornish.
You can get that on streaming now.
It's streaming now. And obviously I've seen you recently in Fleabag, which was excellent.
Yes.
Great show. You were great in it, Angus.
Thank you.
With your bassoon.
Are you hitting on him?
No. I've seen him in Fleabag. Dreadful. Like, what do you want me to say?
You're being very like, you're all over him.
I'm so not. He's just being deliberately.
I'm embarrassed. He's
naughty.
Embarrassed. It just feels awkward.
He's embarrassed about it. He's trying to pretend you're not here, and he's itching to get that left swing going to you.
Jay Cornish has got a weird career, hasn't he?
Has he?
From like, Adam and unpredictable. Joe show. An unpredictable career. But, but yeah, utterly predictable if you know the man.
So what, Attack the Block?
Which I don't, by the way.
I'm trying to think how unpredictable. He had Attack the Block, didn't he?
He just suddenly went into movies.
Yeah, yeah. But it was always in. You could tell from Adam and Joe, they were always very, very into their films.
But they're both tremendous talents, then, aren't they? You know, they've both got a lot more to them than the frivolity that you perhaps would have taken on first glance of what they used to do. What's your do you have a vision in sight for what you want to do?
I left drama school in 2017.
Where did you go?
Lander.
Okay.
I had a great time, and since then I've been filming, and I love filming, I really love it, but you kind of want to do stage as well.
Yeah, is it live? That's where you want to go.
I think like it's great to have the multidiscipline, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Like, I think if you don't keep going with one of them, then you can lose sight of it.
Yeah.
Quickly. But also, I think, you know, just doing coming off Fleabag, where Phoebe created it herself, and she was honestly, you know, in the moment, rewriting bits, redirecting, saying we've got to cut that, we've got to do this, we're going to do, you know, at the time of actually shooting, and like at one point, you know, going, come on, we need a break to the crew just so that we can work this out. It's inspiring to think how you can create your own work, and I think as an actor and a creative, you know, you've constantly got to be thinking about creating your own work, so that you're contributing in that way as well.
Yeah,
you know?
And the different muscles of the same body as well. So there's, so there's certainly an element of, like, I think there's sometimes a misunderstanding in people where, you know, hugely famous film actors go and do a run, and I think people sometimes assume it's financial. It's like it's definitely not financial.
No, not the theatre.
But you know, they want to do a run in the West End or on Broadway or whatever. Mm. And I think it's because the flexing of those muscles feeds back into your other work.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
It absolutely, you know, they do complete the symbiotic. You know, it definitely happens in that way.
Yeah.
So I think it's important as a performer to explore the different ways that you can utilise your talent and the different ways you can utilise, because no matter how exciting something is at first, it gets dull. It does. Mm-hmm. It gets dull as dishwater. Right, you know, if all you're doing is, I'm in another comedy series.
Right.
So then, if you then do a film and then you know,
it's just a chance to scare yourself as well, isn't
Absolutely
it? And I think that's a
yeah.
good thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think theatre. Referring back to our first guest, Ashley, who is in the Tina Turner. He's playing.
Yeah, I was listening.
But he's playing it until. He said, "What do you say? 6 months? The same? Yeah. I think after a while, that would be like the same thing. Six, 7 times a week, isn't it? With 2 matinees.
But it's the balance,
the same
but
thing.
What we spoke about is the balancing of security.
Yeah,
it's such an uncertain job, as all jobs are in reality now. But, you know, traditionally the acting profession is an uncertain job. So there's certainly you can pay that off and go, okay, well, I've got a bit of luxury time here that I've got to be worrying about where the next part's coming from.
Yeah.
But no, I'm a big respecter of that, of people who go outside of their comfort zone and try and do different stuff. And even if it doesn't work, you know, fail whilst daring greatly, that sort of idea.
That's a good one.
That's
yeah.
nice.
It was Lincoln that. I can't claim that one.
Say that again. I sort of more.
It was from the thing.
Daring greatly.
It was the quote is something to do with the credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena who knows the. I forget the full quote, but it's who knows the fear and dread and the adrenaline and all that sort of thing. So his place is never with the cold something souls who know neither victory nor defeat. It's something like that.
Oh.
It's not my quote, and if it was my quote, I'd have probably filled in some bits. Can't remember it. It's worth it. If you look up, the credit belongs to the man who's in the arena, who's actually in the arena. I mean, obviously, you know, it's the man meaning the human. But yeah, it's a great quote.
Oh, I will look it up.
Inspirational.
I'm inspired.
Until you're tired, and then you're like, I don't care.
No, it's been very inspirational today. I hear next week's show has got very inspirational guests
Mate,
on it.
Honestly, I tell you what, right? Genuinely, Angus, you should have come in next week because
I reckon amongst giants.
I reckon
the show we did earlier that goes out next week. Jeez,
I feel like you've inspired me.
Yeah, you have.
Being in here. So to do a full-on inspirational show next week.
Yeah. Which we've already recorded.
Just a motivational talk.
Yeah. It's weird because even though you came in after the show happened, it's weird because in real time you haven't, that you've actually inspired us to go and do one.
He came in essentially with me viewing him as a pugilistic opponent and he left with me considering him a fluffer. And isn't that?
Oh, that's
what more could any of us from either side of the table
Can I use that quote?
Please. I was thinking that for your CV when you asked for a reference. Pop that down. That's Ian's quote for you.
Became a fluffer.
Foodbar Radio. Hi, I'm Antonio O'Keefe from Eaten by Lions.
Hi, I'm Jack Carroll, also from the film Eaten by Lions. You're listening to FUBAR Radio. We've just had a chat with Ian Boldsworth. It's good fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really nice and relaxed, actually.
I think they preferred you to me because you had your little professional head on.
And you were a megalomaniac.
Yes, I was an ego-crazed fool who had no information to hand about the film that we're meant to be promoting. But anyway, it was good fun.
Well, what else isn't it?
Well, that's it, isn't it? I think it's enough to bring both our careers down.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Cheers,
FUBAR. FUBAR Radio presents
Callum McSwiggan.
Today I am joined by probably one of the most incredible guests we've ever been blessed with on this show. Opposite me is the unbelievably incredible Rose McGowan.
Thank you, Callum. What a lovely introduction.
It's one you deserve.
Women are so instrumental in gay rights, in its history, as it should be.
Yeah.
You know, straight or gay, and certainly trans women who kicked off Stonewall and that whole thing and fought so hard for rights and are still fighting so hard for rights. But it doesn't take away from the fact that the white male power structure is what it is.
It is what it is, and it's there, and it's a thing, and we have to acknowledge it and fight it.
Every Wednesday,
Callum McSwiggan,
from 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Sat opposite me in the studio today is the very lovely Lucy Peach. How are you doing?
I'm so good. Thanks for having me, Callum.
I've become a little bit obsessed with you in the past couple of days. I've been doing my research on everything that you've been doing.
Well
and
done.
Your TED Talk.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it.
Oh, thank you. Which one did you watch? The one with swearing or the one without swearing?
Wait, is there more than one?
There's one that's about 18 minutes long that features quite a few F-bombs, and then there's a shorter, more succinct version.
Well, I just saw the short one and I feel like I've massively missed out.
Well, that's debatable. But
see,
yeah.
I said I did my research and I clearly didn't do enough research, did I?
No, I think you've done well.
Well, we're going to be covering so much on the show today. We're going to be talking about sex and periods with your lovely self, and you're also going to be performing for us a little bit later as well. Let's talk a little bit, we've kind of touched upon it a little bit, but let's talk about more about your work specifically, because you have your show coming up at the Edinburgh Fringe, which is my greatest period ever.
Yeah.
That sounds incredible. And is this talking about the cycles?
Yes.
So let's get more into that, because you talked about it as seasons, like you go through spring and winter and
yeah,
summer.
Yeah, yeah. So I have literally just driven down from Stroud, where I'm part of a menstrual cycle awareness training course through a company called Red School. And they are the ones who really like to call the four phases of the cycle the seasons. And there's lots of different words for them. I mean, can I swear?
You can swear you like.
Just getting that out of the way, because I'll tell you what you missed on the sweary TED Talk.
I'm so upset that here I missed the sweary one. Okay.
So essentially, you know, the show is based on the premise that we have a menstrual cycle, and that doesn't mean that you just have a period and you don't have a period. And, you know, the way that we talk about it in school is sort of, you know, here's a tampon, good luck, have a nice life, and just, you know, don't make a mess, don't let anyone see, and
Be ashamed,
yeah, you know,
it's awful.
Catch you later. And it puts it in this framework of being this binary thing that's just an on and off switch. And when you look, you know, and I'm holding up a graph to the microphone, which you can't see, but when you look at a graph of what the hormones are doing, and I know there's people out there who are like, their eyes are already rolling back in their head. They're like, oh, graph, hormones, shut up. But it's your internal world. And, you know, it's like, you know how you feel when you get a rush of adrenaline. You have an emotional response. You have a physical response. It's the same with hormones for men and for women.
And it's science. It's not
that's
voodoo.
That's right. That's it. It's you know, I mean, you can go all voodoo if you want. I mean, you be my guest. But on a really fundamental level, there is a scientific phenomena happening inside of you that we've been really conditioned and socialised to just completely ignore and override and block. And so, you know, basically what is happening throughout the cycle, I'll just give you a quick synopsis of these four phases, and I'll use the words that I like to use for them. And so your cycle starts on day one, which is when you start bleeding. Mm. That's when you have your period. And, you know, you're letting go of the possibility of life. basically. And it's the time where, you know, you've got to really rest and take care of yourself and fill your cup for the month ahead. If you just push through that, you're never going to feel like you've caught up, and you're going to feel tired and pushed and harangued, and because you haven't honoured what your body is doing.
Yeah.
So I really see that as a time to just really be a bit dreamy, the time to dream and to take care of yourself and to really tune in. Because the other thing is, when you kind of... your hormones right now, by the way, are flatlined. There's just not a lot going on. So you're more tired, you're more slow. And with all of that kind of falling away, you're more able to tune into what is really deeply important to you. So, for instance, if something really gives you the shits when you're premenstrual, which is when you're most likely to get the shits, if you...
It's a whole new world to me. See, I did not know that.
And, I mean, you live with women. You know women. Exactly. You know people with a cycle. So this is really useful.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's no wonder that you don't, because of the way we've treated, I mean, women's bodies in general for thousands of years have just been demonised and shit canned. But, you know, this whole idea that when you have your period, it's for rest and for tuning in, and that is, you know, when you get a real download of wisdom, is throughout lots of cultures, you know, lots and lots of tribal cultures have seen this as a really sacred time. And so that's your time to dream. And then what happens is, as your period starts to finish, inside you've got eggs that are getting ready to be released again. So there's lots going on. And as they ripen, your estrogen starts to rise. And now you're in the second phase, which is the time to do, because you're about to lay an egg, basically.
Sure.
So you imagine a bird who's getting really kind of broody and nesty and, you know, is just like madly scrabbling for twigs to get the perfect nest and doesn't want to have a chat, or is just like, it's like, it's a very, it's probably the most masculine, inverted commas, part of the cycle, because you just really, you want to get things done, and it's a bit impatient, and you kind of, you know, you've just come out of, you know, the cave of winter and having your period, and you're just like, I've got all these things to do and I need to do them now. My husband calls it the bull deer moment, because I'm like a cross between a bull in a china shop and a deer in the headlights. I'm just... Go.
I like that.
And then what happens is, once estrogen peaks, you're in the middle of the cycle. So you're about day 14.
And this is your giving stage, right?
Well done,
Callum. Yeah, see, I paid attention.
And so then you ovulate, right? And you're still riding high on the ass-kicking capabilities of the doing phase, but it's got a bit of softness, and you're more interested in collaborating and connecting and, you know, finding out what I can do for you and you can do for me, and how we can solve all the world's problems and have world peace and start charities and plant gardens. And it's like that's when I get on the internet and reach out to people and set up little collaborations, because I'm just like seeing all the possibilities of connection. And then, of course, you know, you have progesterone as well, which is sort of like nature's feel-good hormone. Estrogen is kind of like speed. It can make you a bit speedy. It can make you a bit anxious, you know, because it's like, go, 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 go. But progesterone is like,
And
it makes you sleep better, and it makes you more relaxed. And obviously I'm saying all of this, and it's not a one-size-fits-all template, you know. It's something that's very different to everybody. It's like the way that you respond to caffeine is going to be different to the way that I do. So people are the same with their hormones. But essentially what happens in the giving phase, once you've ovulated, is you have this abundance and you just want to say yes to everything. And the problem is when you say yes to too many things and you think that you have to be that all the time. And so then what happens is you get to your premenstrual take time. And if you expect of yourself the need to be all things to all people and to just keep doing and giving and just being Mother Teresa, you'll feel pissed off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you'll feel like everybody's taking everything from you because you don't have anything left. And what's going on inside is all of those hormones, the progesterone and the estrogen, is plummeting down, and you're getting ready to do it all over again. So that's why when someone says, you know, where's my shoe, or can you pass the salt, it can just feel like the straw that's going to break the camel's back. It's like, I don't want to give you anything. So it's like, you know, when you pay attention, and you really just need to kind of, for 3 months, notice where you are and how that makes you feel and what sort of things that you need, because everyone will have different wig out days and different smooth, easy days. And once you come to see a pattern, you can start using it because it's predictable. Yeah. And we so often, you know, say that women are, you know, crazy and hormonal and unpredictable and unreliable and this sort of roller coaster of random emotions. And it's bullshit. It's actually, you know, a strength to have these different phases. And it doesn't mean you can't do whatever you want whenever you want. It just means that if you pay attention to how you actually feel, it's just another way of being mindful. Pay attention to how you feel, then you can use that. And you can also, what I do is I schedule things when I can. I mean, I work for myself, so I can say, well, when is going to be the best week for me to go and, you know, collaborate on a songwriting project, or when's the best time to go and do some travelling or whatever. So any questions?
I love the idea of it being a strength. And and that was the instant thing that I took when I was listening to you then, is that it is a strength. I think we so often talk about it as a negative thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also, like, how many women do you think are actually, or, you know, or people, do you think are aware of where they are in their cycle and how their cycle works?
Well, in my experience, people are commonly, I mean, you know when you've got your period, obviously, and you know when it's coming sometimes because you can feel a bit more crotchety, but there's that whole midsection that people kind of just think, oh, well, this is when I'm normal, this is when I'm good. And the crazy thing is, you know, if you think, well, okay, so we don't really feel great about having our periods. We don't really feel like we're killing it, like we're nailing it, like we're valuable, like we're productive. So we sort of feel a bit useless when we have our periods, all right, that's a week. When we're premenstrual, we're crazy psycho cows, that's about a week. So that's half of your reproductively viable life, that you are thinking there's something not quite right with me. There's something that's not good enough. I am not enough. And I just think, far out, we are in 2019, I was going to say 2018, and it's, you know, it's like if we're going to have girls to the front ruling the world and people with periods really owning that power, then they need to pay attention, because otherwise it's like how are you going to find out all of the really good bits of who you are if you're just ignoring this whole phenomena that impacts your life?
Do you think men have played a negative role in this whole idea that, you know, it's a bad thing and it's something to be ashamed of and you're weak and you're being emotional and all those ideas around it? It's Look, okay, you can blame us. It's fine.
Well, I just don't think it helps, to be honest.
Sure, okay.
Because I feel like it's really important when you're trying to change something, and you would come across this all the time. When you're trying to change something, you've got to, like, look back at how the fuck you got here and what went wrong to get an understanding, because you don't want to go back there again.
Yeah.
You've got to sit in where you are to really take stock, and then you've just got to move forward and figure out how to get there. And in my experience, you know, it's funny, like, I remember when I first started doing this show, and I was speaking to a male friend of mine who was a musician, really good friend of mine, great guy, great musician. And he said to me, oh, geez, Lucy, we were just having a beer at the pub. And he said, you talk about your period a lot, you know? You're always, you know, banging on about it on Instagram. And I was like, yeah, but Davey, it's happening to me all the time. I'm a creative person. It impacts my life and it's actually awesome. And, you know, what would you rather I talked about my shit?
yeah.
And he thought about it and he said, yeah, I probably would take shit over periods. And I just thought, well, that says more about you than me, you know what I mean? And, like, fuck, we all came out of a lady.
Yeah.
There's no escaping that. It's something that's so integral to just life, you know? Yeah.
Hi, my name's Savannah Brown. I'm a writer and a spoken word poet, and I had the best time at FUBAR today. It was so fun, so just conversational and chill. Callum was so easy to talk to. There were some jokes, but then we talked about some more serious stuff too. So I think it kind of covers all your ground. Some fun, some thoughtful stuff, but everything. A lot of fun. FUBAR's the best.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Sometimes I feel I've got to run away. I've got to get away from the pain you drive into the heart. I run to you, now I run from you.
Radio presents Joey
Page. I've got Honey Long in the studio and we're going to do the best guest competition, right?
Yeah, so I remember that.
We're asking you the same questions that I'm asking all the guests on the show today. Question number two, it's a very simple question. When you buy ice cream, what do you tend to go for?
I'll give people a little life tip. So any Tesco, Sainsbury's or anything like that, they regularly just rotate whether they have Haagen-Dazs or Ben & Jerry's on offer for like £2.50. And I kind of live by that, essentially.
What? You live by the offer?
Yeah, but what I do
and you
is...
you will die by the offer.
Every Wednesday. Joey Page. From 2pm.
FUBAR Radio.
All right, it's now time to welcome my first guests into the studio. I'm very excited at this time to welcome to the show Paul and Pascal from Say Yes Dog. Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome to the show. Where do we want to start with you guys? I'd love to talk about something that comes through very much in your music in terms of the sort of German heritage of the band, but also I'm very intrigued to know about where Luxembourg fits in terms of the kind of music that comes out of there. I've been to Luxembourg once. It's a really beautiful but quite slow-paced place. So,
sure.
Yeah. I just wondered what kind of musical upbringing you would have coming out of Luxembourg.
I mean, basically, it's only me who grew up in Luxembourg. And since we founded the band in Holland and live now in Berlin,
yeah,
there's not much influence of Luxembourg in our music, I would say.
And yeah. What about in your, like, growing up? What I kind of thing?
There. For such a small place, there's quite a lot of bands, and because a lot of kids have good lesson, like music
education is
pretty good. So, and kids start bands like when they're young, and so did I as well. And so that's quite some bands. Not many make it out of Luxembourg, but it's like 500,000 people, so you can't expect a million bands coming out.
Yeah,
of Luxembourg,
course, because it's like quite a small London. Amount of people to begin with. So
yeah.
And you live in Berlin now, but you started the band in Holland. So were you guys like university together, or how did you guys meet?
Aaron grew up in Berlin and went to Holland, to Den Haag, to study there, and there we met Pascal.
Cool.
And, it's not also not the most interesting city in the world, so it's a good city for actually, and it's also it rains a lot, so you just stay in and make some music, and that's how the band started.
I think that's why so many good bands come out of the UK.
I guess, yeah.
Rain grows bands.
Yeah. I mean, London has a good amount of rain and a good amount of
bands.
Bands.
yeah. And so we are literally 9 days away from the new album coming out.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
And so tell us, what's the next 9 days going to be like for you guys? How do you prepare for the release, or are you kind of just waiting?
Yeah, we're kind of from our feeling, I'd say we're finished with this album for a while now, and we're just, I don't know, just waiting until the days, you know, to just fall and then the album would drop. I mean, we're not really, you know, like the last days we've been on tour and playing shows, and also before that, and it's, yeah, I mean, nobody's hearing nobody can hear the whole album yet on, like, you can't hear
online,
it yet on online, yeah, but we're playing the songs already, so
okay,
we're already kind of into the new album mode.
Sure. And are you being surprised by, even though you're playing them live for the first time, and people can't listen to them online in advance, do you still get like a little bit scared because of it? It's not like people can be singing your lyrics back at you, or so do you ever get nervous when you're playing new songs that you haven't released ahead of time?
Yeah, actually right now we play like half of our set is new songs, kind of, I would say. But for that, it's like we're kind of happy that people are not complaining or shouting like play the old songs or anything like that.
Yeah, sure. So we've been playing the old songs and the old set for a while now. For us, it's super nice to just come out with some fresh songs and and start playing them. Yeah.
The first I was aware of you guys was A Friend, which is one of your first things you released, certainly over in the UK. And just really love like how that drives at you and just got that sort of mechanical kind of feel to it. And then the new track that we're playing, Lies,
it seems a bit more mellowed out compared to that. Mm-hmm. So what can we expect from the new album in terms of how will it differ from the last one that you brought out?
Yeah, I guess it's not so. It's maybe a good example for that, because it's, I'd say it's a bit more mellow, and it's maybe not so like in your face, four to the floor beats for the whole album like we did, like we did for the last one. And this one, it's I don't know. There's an, I have the feeling on some songs there's some more space to, I don't know, to breathe and to really develop as a song. It's not really like the, I mean, not all the tracks, but some of them, they're just not like pumping through like most of the stuff from the old album.
Yeah, right. Album. And you guys get to play literally everywhere. Like, you've been in Asia, you've been in Korea, you've done loads and loads of places. Which place surprises you the most when you go there, that like you're just like surprised
the
that
audience?
You've got to be, yeah.
I mean, South Korean audience was, for me, was like the biggest surprise, I guess. Just we were playing on a festival, and for us it was already like, we had this afternoon spot playing there, really small but attentive crowd, like they were really listening. But then later we went to this K-pop headlining artist at the night, and then just like a European festival outside, you have like 30,000 people in front of the stage, and not one of them like spoke one word when the guy was singing. So you're outside and in a field, and you have like 30,000 people like just shutting up and listening until the song is over, and then they just go crazy for exactly 5 seconds until it just collapses again,
right,
and it's dead silent again.
And that's so weird.
This kind of feeling is,
like, sounds very eerie.
Yeah. It's super weird.
And,
but yeah.
And how, I know this is probably a question you get asked a lot, but it's just something that I personally want to know. How is it different here compared to, say, Berlin?
From
when
the
you
audience
play live, yeah.
I guess. I mean, like the UK gigs we had, there were some in Liverpool and on the Great Escape in Brighton.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes people get drunk quite early. That's my
yeah, right.
That's what I remember from our UK gigs. And it's always a good party. That's for sure.
Yeah, I would say it's both. It's more wild in a way, mm-hmm. but people also tend to talk maybe more while we play. But then
right.
at the same time, they also like don't, you know, it's that's totally fine.
Yeah. Because
in some countries we have the feeling people only come to talk, but in the UK it's maybe like,
yeah,
know,
UK
it's
that's
like
interesting
time
actually.
But like Spain and playing in Barcelona,
yeah.
where you have just like the people in the audience, they're talking and having a good time, but they also really focus on the music at the same time. And that's
in Berlin or in Germany, people are. Are also like not like in South Korea, but rather quiet and really attentive. Right?
Yeah, or
yeah,
just
like really just like drinking it in,
silently dancing maybe. Like that also happens a lot.
Oh, cool.
Well,
we always had these both the two different kind of audiences, like the one who listen and dance, and the ones who just make loud parties, and it's both fine with us. Like it's. Can be both super nice shows then.
Yeah, cool. And so tell us a little bit more about how you made the new album Voyage. Like, is there anything that you've tried for the first time on this album that you didn't do previously, or is there anything that did you work in a different way on any parts of it?
We didn't really work in a different way, but it's, I think it's just a natural like development from what we had and what we kind of developed into now. It's just songs, they feel like, some songs feel a bit more, I don't know, like matured in a way that we rely on being like super simple and being totally cool with that. And maybe on the first album we would have tried to put everything in there what we kind of liked, and this time we have the, I don't know, we can also like, there was a couple of situations where we just took a step back and went back to the demo rumbly version.
Right.
It just had the best feel for us, and
I think that's maybe like a maturity thing, that you just go with your instinct rather than what your ideal is. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes you'll do something and be like, oh, that wouldn't be what I would normally like want to come out, or
you know,
but you're like, well, I just trust my instinct as you get, and you've been going longer. So
yeah, for sure.
Sign of good musicianship, I would guess. So you guys are really busy. You're going off on a European tour. Are you going to anywhere that you've not been before that you're excited to go to?
Yes, going to Russia for the first time.
Oh, wow.
this summer. Yeah. St. Petersburg Sterilito Festival.
Nice.
It's going to be exciting. I've heard a lot about Russia and playing there, and it's crazy.
And tonight you're in Oslo in dear old Hackney. It's my neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
And how are you feeling about that?
Great. I mean, it's a great area. We know it already, but we don't know that club.
No, it's good.
I've not been there.
Yeah, good. It's really nice.
We just said it's on the third floor and there's no elevator to bring up the gear.
We're supporting Phil Moriva, friends of us, and they... It's like this rock, indie rock band, and they have a lot of gear,
but that's their problem.
That's their problem. Basically, actually, normally we have to help them, but today we're with you, so they have to carry everything.
There we go.
On their own.
Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? I'm Chauncey Black.
I'm Mark Middleton.
I'm Levi Little,
and I'm E. Williams,
and we are Black Street. Hey, yo, we enjoyed the show today. Sure. It was amazing. Foo Bar Radio was off the chain. We had a great time speaking to everybody. We felt like we were home in there. They're calling us legends throughout the whole show. And
they really knew the music.
Exactly.
That was so great.
Right.
The fact that the guys really knew the music, you know?
Right.
And they're funny.
Yes.
Hilarious. We had a good time.
Foo Bar Radio presents
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
It is, of course, Low Key.
Oh, thank you so much. If you were to listen to a lot of the music that's pumped out by the corporate media, you would not know at what period of time you were listening to that music. All of the greatest artists, when we think of John Lennon, when we think of Bob Marley, you know, John Lennon was funding the Black Panthers at one point and on very good terms with Bobby Seale. Bob Marley was intrinsically linked to politics in Jamaica and was in many ways a game changer, actually, with what he was doing. Some of the greatest artists of yesteryear, if you listen to their music, it's almost like listening to a historical document.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
Every Wednesday
from 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
I've got my special guest co-host in the studio with me, Dan Masaku. We're just welcoming our first guest of the day, Killer Keller. What are you saying, my bro?
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Thank you for having me.
No, not at all. It's been a long time coming, and also it's just been an ages since I actually saw you last in person as well.
I think it was
in Camden somewhere the last time I saw you.
Yeah, you mentioned Camden. I mean, I go there so frequently. I love Camden.
Yeah, I mean,
no doubt about it. We probably back then, wouldn't
definitely, it? Definitely. Yeah. What have you been up to, man? Because you are the arguably best known beatboxer.
I was literally sitting there thinking that myself. I was thinking, I reckon you're probably the most famous beatboxer
from the UK, 100%.
But from UK, I mean, I kind of spearheaded the whole European thing. So
yeah. I was gonna say possibly like more than the UK as well.
It happened.
Massive. Yeah.
Just go big.
At least probably the most successful.
Yeah, I was really fortunate. I was in the right place at the right time. It was a combination of that.
But
creation's love. You pass it on.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, the baton gets passed. Mm-hmm. It's all an organism. And I'm just happy to still be a contender. You know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You've kind of diversified a lot. Since you kind of made your name beatboxing, you know.
Well, you got it, haven't you?
Yeah. Are you still very active in the beatboxing world?
It's to a degree, yeah. I mean, it's more like a judge as opposed to.
I love that.
Compete, you know.
I love that.
You know, I got exempt so early on because I was there. I like one of three in the world doing it at one stage, early doors.
Yeah.
So it's like I kind of got exempt. I maybe went through like two or three battles, but that was just for a laugh, maybe a bit of cash when I was broke. But you know, these guys are like, they've got.
It's a sport now,
bro.
It's
like URL.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like it's on a whole new. The superstars in the championships that championship circuit is international, so you know they can do a whole festival
if
equivocal
they want.
Of a run, and then they're set for the rest of the year. You know? They can go hang out in Thailand or something for the next 8 months, and then come back in. It's that kind
right.
of thing.
Has it come that has it really come that far? Then the sort of scene,
the competitions are crazy,
incredible
in a real kind of turntablist chin strokey way.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like it's gone beyond, you know. Reeps One, really good friend of mine, you know.
Yeah, I know. I'm very aware of Reeps One.
That's my dude.
Yeah.
And like he, you know, he coins it as, you know, it's new voice. It's like there's a technological aspect, there's a scientific aspect. And I think the other thing as well is like with with kids, a lot of them are just like completely like magnetized by the how the hell does this person do this thing with his mouth.
I don't think that will ever wear off.
Yeah, it won't.
We've got a few now, actually. You're probably only the second beatboxer we've had on the show. Well, not the second, but we had a crew of beatboxers, obviously.
Okay.
So, and that consisted of MC Zany.
Beatbox Collective.
Yes, Beatbox that's it. Collective. Yeah, we had them on. Yeah.
So we had them on. So you're only the second. But, you know, like I said, you've diversified. You know, you've DJed. There's been a band, hasn't there?
Yeah, I did a thing with my ex-girlfriend called Them and Us.
Yes,
that happened
of course.
For like a period of maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Until we parted ways. It was, you know, in hindsight, okay, I kind of went back to go forward, you know, like you do in the entertainment industry.
Right.
But on the flip side, it's like I couldn't have done what I did with her in that project if it was Killer Kelly. It just wouldn't have worked. You know, people have like, you know, don't leave any room for people to make their own interpretations. You are what it says on the tin, and that's the way it should be. You know what I mean?
I hear that. So you didn't want to distract people by being Killer Keller in Them and Us.
Yeah.
Right, I hear that.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And also, it was of a new age. Like, beatboxing was taking such a leap forward and whatnot. For me at the time, it felt so much better to be an observer. You know what I mean? It just was like, man, I could take the foot off the brake pedal a little bit and just like chill a little bit and see what's going on, rather than, you know, because for a long time it was like next record, tour, next record, DJ, da 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 da, and now I've got that energy back now.
Yeah.
But at that time, you know, at between the ages of 32 and 37, I was like, yeah, you know what, I'm gonna chill with it.
Yeah.
And it was the best thing I did, man.
Okay.
Jumped into another project.
Yeah. And but all the while you felt you could do that because you'd cemented your reputation already.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think that's the way it goes.
Yeah, yeah. So the sort of current project is the podcast.
Yeah, man. It's mad.
How's that going? And why a podcast?
So I parted ways with my then girlfriend, and for me it was like, all right, so I need my mates, so get them all in and let's do a podcast. It was literally that was my theory. It was
kind of therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and I can talk about stuff, but as it's grown and the wave of podcasting has taken on a new energy, I've realised, man, it's like, in the same respect as MySpace or Facebook or Instagram or whatever the new platform, podcasts for me, I can envelop every single set skill that I have, I can incorporate it within this platform.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if I can beatbox with the guests. You know what I mean? I can throw, you know, ideas and thoughts and just musings about the music scene that, you know, it goes beyond the hip hop culture and the you know, the UK scene. It's like I get completely into like music, and I think that translates also graffiti, also street culture. And then I can top and tail it with the commercials, my own voiceovers, do my own soundtracks, do everything. For me, it's just like a no-brainer.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. You know what I mean? On it. And I'm just addicted to it. Like, bro, like every opportunity, like, I'm on it like a carb on it.
And how many episodes deep are you now? If you can remember off the top of your head.
79.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. I only thought I had like 15 mates. I'm like, all right, yeah, no, it's been great, you know. I'm loving it. Loving it, man.
If you could have any podcast guest, this might be a cliche question by now, but dead or alive, if you could chat to anyone on your podcast, who would it be?
Ooh. David Rodigan, that'd be wicked.
Okay.
David Rodigan.
There's something we forgot to do.
I can't quite think. Before you do go, tell everyone where to find you.
Yes, man. Where can people get you on social media episodes?
Oh, bless you. Yeah, killerkellerofficial.com.
Thank you.
Wicked, wicked, Fubar Massive. This is the original Big Bad General Levy. Just like to say I had a great time on the radio station today. It's a real funny vibes, good vibes, positive. Big up the man like Michael Payne. Incredible. Mad the wall at them and spin them like a windmill. Wicked, wicked, Fubar Massive. General Levy says so. Incredible. Boom!
Fubar Radio presents
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club.
Our guest now, Daniel Lawrence Taylor.
Hello.
The creator of the sitcom Time Wasters.
Yes.
And I can imagine if we do a Series 3, the amount of stuff that I will get rid of for Series 3 as well. A
couple more white people in it as well.
Yeah. Well, I'll probably get rid of all the white people actually and just make it all black. That's my aim. It's an all black sitcom where we just are racist.
That's kind of crazy.
It is, but that's comedy.
Every Friday,
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club
from 12 PM. Fubar Radio.
Joined now by actor Ingrid Oliver.
Hi.
Hi. Actor and comedian.
I was waiting for the description.
There was a pause
there. You weren't sure.
Well, we get a lot of so-called comedians and I'm always in disbelief of the arrogance that they actually go, yeah, I'm a comedian.
Oh, I'm definitely not. I'm a comedy actor.
There you go. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Am I really loud or I just sound loud?
In your ears?
No, fine. Don't even worry about it.
You sound absolutely normal.
That's because I've been doing theatre, so I project.
Sure, right, of course.
What I'm plugging is The Hustle.
I've seen it on the side of buses.
Yeah, so have I. I saw it yesterday.
That's exciting, isn't it?
My first time seeing a film, I'm in loads of films. My first time seeing a film on the side of the bus. It's the first film I've been in, so it's the first time I've seen it.
Oh, is it your first ever film?
Actually, no, I was in Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging.
Oh, yeah.
Of course you were.
That doesn't count.
How dare you? I was a very small part. I was a lesbian PE teacher who was weirdly was quite creepy towards the 14-year-olds.
Right.
Girls.
Right. Wouldn't happen now, probably. Probably wouldn't.
No, it's too PC gone mad now, isn't it? Of course, you can't get away with any of that stuff. So
you were in a movie that was made in 2019.
Correct.
When did you finish on it?
Oh, no, it was made 2018. Mm. Where are we now? 2019. Yes. Yeah, we finished it in 2018. And then, so it stars Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway.
The Oscar winner Anne Hathaway. And Rebel Wilson, two very funny ladies. And I play, basically, Anton Rogers' part, who's the French sort of policeman. He's a bit bent.
Who's Anton Rogers?
He plays the sort of corrupt. He's the right hand. I'm basically Anne Hathaway's right hand woman.
Yeah.
But who's Anton Rogers?
Oh, who's Anton Rogers?
Fresh Fields.
May to December.
May to December. Yeah, right. That's what I thought. He was obviously he played the chief inspector in Son of Pink Panther, starring Roberto Benigni.
Did he?
Yes. Of course he did, Anton Rogers. I just needed that little nudge over the hill to remember. But May to December. What? What a series.
That was a great series.
He was 70, she was 17. It was a beautiful romance. So you're playing the Anton Rogers character.
Yeah, so I auditioned for it and I didn't think it had gone that well.
Sure.
And because I did languages at university. So I pride myself on getting things right grammatically and accent-wise. So I did a very straight French accent. And I think that looking back at the Anton Rogers, it's all very big.
Yes.
And I think generally when non-French people or do a French accent, it's all quite Inspector Clouseau. And
Hamburger!
Yeah.
That was Steve Martin doing Inspector Clouseau. Funny bit in the whole film.
Did Steve Martin do Inspector Clouseau as well?
The Pink Panther.
Hang on.
Steve Martin did.
I only remember the Peter Sellers ones. So.
Well, not only did Peter Sellers, was Peter Sellers not the only. Who was the other guy? It was Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin.
That I saw that on Netflix yesterday for the first time. I didn't watch it, but I saw the trailer. I was like, oh my God, Alan Arkin was
Inspector Clouseau for one film.
So who's there been? Clouseau, Martin, Steve Martin.
Steve Martin did two Pink Panther movies.
Modern,
recently.
Quite modern ones, like a few years ago.
And there's a bit when he can't say hamburger. He's going, hamburger! And I went to see it in Watford in a packed cinema. And no one laughed for the entire film. And then he goes, hamburger! And I laugh out loud. And I'm immediately embarrassed by the fact that I'm the only person who's laughed in this comedy. It was just like,
Can I ask you a question? Do you find fart jokes funny?
No.
Do you find fart jokes funny?
No.
Oh, you don't? Are you not lying?
No, I'm not lying.
Good. Is he lying?
I don't know. No, I find them
funny. Oh, do you find them funny?
I actively removed them from Uncle because I was just like, we're better than this.
That's the thing, because I feel like the people who laugh at comedy French accents are the same people that laugh at fart jokes, but you just disproved that theory.
They're not.
You're an anomaly.
They're not.
You're unique. Special.
I don't think I am unique. I think that's just. I'm sure there is a Venn diagram of the crossover, but.
But I well no, because I don't like fart jokes. I just don't. I'm half German. I don't like. For me, a body is a beautiful thing. It's all very natural. Why are we laughing at bodily functions? I'm quite po-faced about it.
Oh really? I just pretend.
I don't like a cartoon fart thing. I like a fart joke where it appears like someone shat themselves or something.
Oh, the shot.
I think that's quite funny. Yeah. But I quite like, I don't like a kind of raspberry kind of level fart joke. So but I quite like a sort of, I think there's a median of it that I find funny.
You've got a scale.
Yeah. There's a frequency where I'm like, that's funny.
I think that, yeah, if it's just someone that's walking onto a screen and farting, then that's not. But I think what, in order to appreciate it, there has to be a certain element of human tragedy.
Mm. Absolutely.
So the fact that there were real stakes involved.
If it's real,
You know, there was a fart joke in Malcolm in the Middle where the mum bent over. I think they were having a family argument and the mum bent over and accidentally farted. And then they all laugh, but she's humiliated.
Yes.
And you go, there was a human story there.
Yes.
How beautiful. Mm.
The thing I'm thinking of.
It's a bit in Dumb and Dumber when he shits. When he's in the toilet, and you go, this is amazing.
I remember seeing a filmed insert on like a music. Might have been something like SMTV or something.
We're just joined in the studio by Ingrid Oliver, and we're discussing fart jokes.
My name's Elliot Spellagudder, and I've just been on Fubar Radio on Nick and Nat's fan club. And I really enjoyed myself. It was lovely. And I really enjoyed talking about things I'm a fan of. I think that's the experience that most people get from coming on Fan Club. And I think it's the experience people want to get when listening to Fan Club as well, making funny jokes and delivering witty riposts. It's all a good bit of fun, isn't it? Because when we listen to the radio, we want to laugh and we want to have a nice time. And I think me, Nick and Nat have succeeded. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
It's a shame the way you mess around with the man. It's a shame the way you hurt me. It's a shame the way you mess around with your man. I'm sitting all alone by the telephone. Waiting for your call when you don't call at all. It's a shame the way you mess around with your man. It's a shame the way you play with my emotions. It's a shame the way you mess around with your man. You're like a child at play on a sunny day. First you play with her and then you throw.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.